Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, since 1985 offering discerning patients and dentists options for same-day replacement of missing and compromised teeth. Information online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. For some time, the sports landscape has been characterized by the devaluation of regular seasons. In no sport is the phenomenon more dramatic than it is in the National Basketball Association. Now at All-Star Weekend, the halfway point in the NBA season, Indiana and New Jersey have the best records in the East. Dallas has the best record in the Western Conference and in the NBA as a whole. Sacramento is right behind the Mavs. Last Tuesday in Dallas, the Kings and the Mavericks played each other for the second time this season, and Sacramento won by a point. But how much does that matter? How much do any of the numbers matter until April, when the playoffs begin? From Dallas, Glenn Mitchell of KERA has this report on the seriousness, or lack of same, with which players and fans regard even the most allegedly intriguing regular season contests.
Last year, Dallas beat the Kings 3 games out of 4 in the regular season, and the Kings eliminated them from the playoffs in 5 games. This year, Dallas leads the league in wins, but was blown out by 29 points in their only appearance so far in Sacramento. Tuesday night figured to be payback time, especially with the Kings missing 2 of their best players, Chris Webber and Bobby Jackson. Sacramento built a big first-half lead, but at halftime, disgruntled Mavericks fans disagreed about whether it all really mattered.
This game does matter because if we don't beat them without Webber, then that makes us look even worse. This is a statement game in the fact that we got beat really bad by him in Sacramento, and if we don't win this game, we need to start looking at a trade at the trade deadline.
It doesn't matter because Chris Webber's not here, and if Chris Webber was here, they'd probably be up by 10. I just hope that we can make a trade and get some defense.
Yes, defense would help. Dallas let Sacramento shoot 70% in the first quarter and 62% in the first half. Still, it's just 1 game out of 82, but one in which the Kings prevailed 110-109. Afterwards, Mavericks players Raja Bell and Rafe LaFrentz tried to keep it in perspective with varying degrees of success.
Yeah, you know, we wanted this one bad. You know, and it's tough to go into the break losing to them, especially to them, you know, the way we got beat by them the first time. But, you know, the positive is we are the best team in the league right now. And, you know, we got a couple of days off to freshen up. And, you know, we get to see them a lot more before the playoffs. So
it does matter. Every game matters, regardless of who you're playing. Every game you're out there struggling, trying to win. And tonight we didn't. But there's a big difference between basketball now and basketball in late April, May, and June.
So what's the regular season good for? If it ended today, Washington at 24-25 would just slip into the Eastern Conference's 8th and final playoff spot. Kings coach Rick Adelman says at least the regular season gives you a sense of who you might be up against. Sort of.
I think it's always a good measuring stick when you look and see how you match up with teams. And the playoffs is about matchups. But, you know, when you play a team, sometimes the situations are so drastically different when you play one team one time, one team. Like, we played Utah last year, and we clobbered them by 25 points average for the 4 games. Now, in the playoffs, they're a little bit different team when we played them. We barely won that series. So I just think the regular season, yeah, you can catch a team at the right time, and you can be caught at the wrong time. And it's not going to make any difference if you're a good team and you believe in yourself in the playoffs. That stuff's all going out the window at that point.
Mavericks point guard Steve Nash says his teammates must get over their pain of losing individual games and instead concentrate on the bigger picture.
Well, we beat them 3 of 4 last year and then lost them in the playoffs. So we realize the regular season isn't the be-all and end-all at all. So we just need to keep plugging away and realize that the playoffs are a new season and we'll be prepared and more experienced hopefully when that time comes. But, you know, we're not going to roll over and say just because we haven't beaten them the first 2 times, our season's over. You know, we feel like we've got a great opportunity to win a championship, and we feel like we're very close to beating all the good teams.
Of course, that kind of confidence suits this Kings fan just fine.
Let's let the Dallas Mavericks win and let them lure themselves into a false sense of security. We'll take them down in the playoffs five games next, like we did last year.
Dallas and Sacramento meet twice more in the regular season. If the playoffs started today and all the favored teams were to defeat underdogs in the first and second rounds, the Mavericks and Kings would play each other in the NBA's Western Conference Finals. For Only a Game, this is Glenn Mitchell in Dallas.
Joining me now on the line from Atlanta, the site of this year's NBA All-Star festivities, is Sacramento Bee columnist Scott Howard Cooper. Scott, welcome back to Only a Game.
Good to talk with you again.
We just heard a report that strongly suggests not only that Sacramento or Dallas should make it to this year's NBA Finals, but that the Lakers will not do so. Is that a dangerous assumption at this stage of the season?
Very much so, especially the way things have been going the last couple weeks. The Lakers are certainly not where they want to be, but they're definitely headed in the right direction. It's a lot different feeling around that team than it was, say, in December, maybe even the early part of January. They've got a lot more reason to be encouraged. The talk, remember, a while ago was, will they make the playoffs? And now I think everybody feels with much better certainty that they will. And the talk instead is, how far will they go in the playoffs?
After a very weak start, Portland is making a case for itself as a playoff contender. Phoenix, which nobody initially thought of as a playoff team, is now one of the best or at least better teams in the West. Does this just indicate the extent to which the conference is volatile?
Well, I think so, but I think people felt all along that there's minefields all over the place out west. But the fact that Portland is playing this well makes them a much bigger factor than I think most people expected.
Something else that people supposedly knew at the beginning of the season is that the Clippers were going to be better. They were going to emerge as a postseason threat. They have battled to stay neck and neck with the Lakers much of the season, but this season that just means they're no good. What's going on with L.A.'s basketball doppelganger?
Suckers. Anybody who believed that this is the season that it was going to happen is really kicking themselves, and that includes me. I thought that not only would this team make the playoffs, but that they could get as high as number six in the West. The one uncertainty that they had in years past was point guard, and they addressed that in the offseason by getting Andre Miller in a trade from Cleveland. But things have unraveled much faster than anybody expected. Even for ownership there, which has a history of bungling things, this is setting new standards.
With the exception of Cleveland, perhaps, it seems that every Eastern Conference team has a shot at the playoffs, or am I misreading the flow or the standings?
No, and I think that if Cleveland wins two in a row, that they're right back in the race. The East is typically very wide open. The difference about the East this year, and they're used to hearing a lot of comments about how they're the JV squad compared to the West and things like that, but they're actually is a reason for the East to have a great deal of credibility. Not so much that they would be favored at the moment if they were to play one of the top four teams coming out of the West for the finals, but there's an awful lot of talent that's developing over there. The way that Indiana has made such quick strides, that Detroit has held strong, that New Jersey and Boston continue to play well. Depth-wise, one Western Conference coach told me the other day that the East might be in better shape than the West.
This season, the All-Star selection process was about as weird as usual, if not a little more weird. Vince Carter, who's played just 15 games all season, is a starter in the All-Star game. What does all this say about fan voting?
Well, that it's a popularity contest, that it's not really an All-Star game, that people get excited about the marketing and who can, you know, have the best dunks that they'll see on the 11 o'clock news. It's much more about fans' desires than an actual acknowledgement of who fans think are the best players at that position at any time in a season.
And should it be that way? Fans' desires doesn't sound like a bad idea for a game that is, after all, a product to delight fans.
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. It's something that I think everybody comes to not just accept, but in a sense expect. The ironic thing is that the people that have, in a sense, the biggest problem with it sometimes are the players themselves. There's been some discussion about moving it to the players choosing. Maybe the players choose the starting lineup and then going from there in terms of the popular vote. There's several different options out there. My sense is that nothing's going to change. It's going to stay the same.
Shaquille O'Neal will come off the bench while Yao Ming will start for the West. Detroit's Ben Wallace, the East's best center, will start for the East. So, you know, the fans sometimes get it right.
Well, I think the fans got it right in the East, and it's great the way Ben Wallace has gotten his due recognition over the last couple of years. I thought he was one of the most underrated players even before that. He was deserving of this attention, so that's a wonderful thing. The Yao Ming phenomenon has been terrific. And he genuinely is a good guy. He comes across in such a positive way, as such an endearing person caught up in this, what would affect so many other people as a whirlwind of being in a new country and playing a schedule that's much more hellacious than anything he's been used to. He's got all these marketing demands and media demands, and he's held up very, very well. But he is not better than Shaquille O'Neal at this point, so I don't know that the fans got it right. I think that that was a little bit of a, let's see, somebody else besides Shaq or somebody else besides the Lakers in there. That might be a little bit of a backlash on three consecutive titles for the Lakers. But I don't think that anybody in the league would really consider that Yao Ming is a better player right now than Shaq.
You know, the National Hockey League abandoned its format of the world versus North America for the All-Star game, maybe with a recent influx of great and very good players from China and France and all sorts of other places. The NBA should go with a system like that.
It's not a bad thought, at least, to sort of mess around with. I think it's still a few years away, because while you do have some very good international players, I don't know if you have, you know, realistically, if you have 12 to put together who are deserving of All-Stars. I think at that point you would start getting into reaches a little bit for players who are just pretty good and giving them the All-Star recognition. Besides, there's still the good thing about the NBA is there's still a little of that East versus West rivalry. There's still a little bit of that intrigue. And as we were talking about before, it's sort of a, you know, can anybody from the East beat the West? And that's the way it's been for the last couple of years. So there's still a little bit of that interest, I think, of East versus West.
Of course, basketball could always do what soccer does. You know, if you had a great-grandfather who had a German mother or something like that, he could qualify to play for the world instead of the U.S.
I thought you were going to suggest just play a lot of scoreless games.
Ooh. Scott Howard Cooper covers the NBA and other matters for the Sacramento Bee. He's our occasional NBA guy on Only a Game as well. Thanks, Scott.
Good to be with you again.
It's 18 minutes past the hour. A crow hunting tournament in Auburn, New York last weekend drew mixed reviews. The annual competition is designed to eliminate some of the estimated 50,000 crows that annually descend on the area and, according to those sponsoring the tournament, eat the eggs and young of smaller birds. Protesters seeking to protect the crows by scaring them away were not convinced by hunters' claims that by thinning the crow population, they were operating as conservationists. At least one hunter, Scott Oberdorf, claimed those objecting to the crow shoot were extremists. I saw a T-shirt that read, "Don't shoot crows, they're human too," he said. Well, they're not human.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Jim Furyk jumped into the lead at the Pebble Beach National Pro-Am Golf Tournament. To read more and for other sports news, log on to our website, wbur.org, and click on News Headlines. We are funded by you, our listeners, and by Dover Rug Company, classic, contemporary, eclectic rugs and carpeting for today's lifestyle. Dover Rug Company, Natick and Hanover, on the web at doverrug.com or 800-DOVER-RUG. By Tech Fusion, restructuring IT departments with their new IT technology to help meet clients' reduced budgets. 617-491-1001. Tech Fusion, where data is never lost. And by Johnson Drugs in Waltham, a health and wellness pharmacy, providing care with personal attention, offering an integration of mainstream and complementary medicine. 15 degrees in Boston right now. The time is 7:20.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, Charlie Pierce on the week's sports news. But first, on Wednesday, high school basketball star LeBron James regained the right to play for St. Vincent St. Mary High School in Ohio when Summit County Judge James Williams blocked a state ruling that had rendered James ineligible. The Ohio High School Athletic Association had bounced James from the team for accepting $845 worth of sports jerseys from a Cleveland sporting goods store. LeBron James is big, strong, and talented enough so that he will very likely go number one in the NBA draft, though he is only 18 years old. In that respect, of course, he's unusual. But insofar as he began drawing attention because of his basketball talent when he was still a very young player, he is representative. Mike Jones, 6'5", 192 pounds, has starred for the past several years at Thayer Academy in Braintree, Massachusetts. He's been rated as high as the sixth best high school guard in the country by various magazines. Before a recent afternoon practice at Thayer, we talked in a conference room a floor above the basketball court.
I mean, I started at the age of seven. I wasn't really, you know, that good.
Started playing at the age of seven.
And from there on, I mean, I sat the bench for a while. My dad was a coach. Sat the bench for like maybe 2 to 3 years just to watch everybody play. And then, you know, once I got the chance to play, I, you know, went out and I guess produced, you know, I did well. And from there on, that's when people started really paying attention to me.
The early attention was local, but within a fairly short time, word that Mike Jones at 10 was making teenaged opponents look slow and foolish began to spread. Jones's parents kept him off the middle school team when he was in 6th and 7th grade, encouraging him to bring up his marks. But when Mike had just one more year to play before high school, the scouts began gathering.
From there on, I mean, I had, you know, other high school coaches saying, you know, come to my high school because, you know, you'll get this opportunity, that opportunity. Then further on, you know, you'll go to this type of college, this type of atmosphere.
While high school coaches offered the 13-year-old Jones various inducements, Thayer Academy basketball coach Rob Dixon began talking to Mike's mom. Lisa Jones, a mother of seven, was 15 when Mike, her oldest child, was born. Coach Dixon knew she didn't want him talking to her about how high Mike might go in the NBA draft.
We didn't talk about basketball. We didn't talk about what he could potentially become. The focus with her was, you know, she wants to make sure that he gets an opportunity to go to college and get a college degree. And I said, well, they clearly can provide that for him if he's committed as a student. And the first conversation I had with Mike was about making that commitment as a student.
Lisa Jones and her husband Curtis couldn't get Mike into Thayer Academy as early as they'd have liked because his SSAT scores weren't high enough. In the front room of the first-floor Dorchester apartment where her family lives, surrounded by scores of Mike's trophies and two bubbling fish tanks, Lisa explained why she kept pushing.
It comes from me not being able to go to college. And I know how hard it is out in society, you know, for young black men, especially, not to have an education and, you know, think that basketball is the way out. Because my thing is, what happens if he tears his knee up? But with that piece of paper, he can always do something. And then on the joking side, I mean, his father does the basketball, so I got to do something. Because it's hard with seven children. Somebody got to take a certain piece. Somebody got to do something. So we're kind of hot potatoing it around.
At the risk of prolonging that metaphor, Mike Jones developed into one sweet potato. In a recent game against Groton Academy, Mike, who's been averaging 23 points and 14 rebounds per game, was by far the most proficient player on the floor. All the talk about academics notwithstanding, Thayer coach Rob Dixon acknowledges that even when he first saw Mike play ball, he was thoroughly impressed.
And I was excited because I saw him doing some things athletically that a lot of, you know, 17 and 18-year-olds, and he was probably 13, 14 when he was doing these things. 17, 18-year-olds had difficulty doing. Taking off inside of the free throw line, dunking off jump shots, you know, guys taking a shot, he flies out of them, you know, out of the lane in the middle of the air, catching the ball and dunking with two hands. I mean, he had a, you know, nice range on his jump shot, a nice form and technique. And, you know, you had to notice that. You know, he's what we call an ooh-ah guy, you know. A lot of people will come and say, ooh-ah, you know, did you see that?
Proficient as he is on the court, Mike Jones is only one of a great many ooh-ah guys. The playgrounds are full of stars, some of them pushing 30 or more, a lot of them victims of the way things work in the basketball world and in the world at large. That circumstance hasn't escaped Lisa Jones, who remembers Mike's earliest playmates.
A lot of kids that started in that circle are no longer in that circle. A lot of the children, when Michael and Gerard were in the second and third grade, are either now, they might have been a grade or two higher than them, either deceased in jail or four kids and standing on the corner, but no high school, not even a middle school diploma.
Mike Jones began drawing the attention of college recruiters several years ago. As far as Lisa was concerned, the most attractive presentation came from the recruiters representing the University of Maryland, the reigning NCAA champion. They'd learned that Mike's academic interests ran toward drawing, engineering, and business. They assured his mother that Mike would get the opportunity to study these disciplines and that he'd also get whatever academic counseling he required and requested. She was most impressed that Maryland's representatives barely mentioned basketball. Mike was receptive to Maryland's pitch, too, but for reasons of his own.
Well, actually, Maryland came to one of the games last year. Yeah. We played, Worcester Academy, and we ended up losing that game, but there were little things that I did very well, according to, dealing with myself plus the team. And that's when, from there on, they started showing interest. And I didn't really look into Maryland like that until I seen the tournament, the national tournament. And, they won NCAAs, and then I thought to myself, well, maybe, that is somewhere I definitely want to be. So from there on, Maryland showed a lot of interest and I showed interest in them.
Maryland, of course, has shown interest in lots of excellent players. Some experts rate the university's incoming freshman crop of basketball players as the nation's strongest. But according to the Bloomberg News Service, which collected the graduation rate statistics for teams in the 2002 NCAA tournament, Maryland had only graduated 19% of its basketball players over the previous 6 years. A spokesman for the program said he thought the number was closer to 30% now and explained that transfers and players who left school to play in the NBA counted against the graduation rate. Still, all the programs are rated under the same rules, and Maryland has been graduating far fewer players than schools such as Stanford, St. John's, Notre Dame, Xavier, or Kansas. I asked Thayer Academy coach Rob Dixon what would prevent Mike Jones from becoming one more great player who was never taken seriously as a student. And I wondered if once he arrived on campus, the folks in the basketball program, including the coaches, anxious to keep him eligible to play, would allow Mike to genuinely challenge himself academically.
Their concern and their fear of dealing with his moms, and they don't want the wrath of Mrs. Jones. They just do not want to deal with that. So the reality is, I think they know why Mike's coming. And they also realize that they have a responsibility to making sure he takes care of business in the classroom, which means, no bad men, no wrestling 101.
Not for 3 credits.
No, exactly. So he's going to step in a situation where he's going to have academic demands on him. He's going to have some academic responsibilities set on him. He's capable. He's proven it by being here. He's done the work that's expected of him here, so he can make the transition.
There's reason to think that Rob Dixon's right about Lisa Jones's determination and her son Mike's preparation. But highly recruited basketball players, particularly highly recruited African-American basketball players, often fail to earn degrees, even when they don't leave school for the opportunity to play professionally. Dewan Chandler, with whom I spoke recently at the Huntington Avenue YMCA in Boston, is such a player, or former player. He's 44 now. The basketball community in Boston, where Chandler grew up, began celebrating his accomplishments on the court when he was a child. And when he was 15, they staged Dewan Chandler Day.
I was really embarrassed by the whole thing, to tell you the truth. I didn't think it was all warranted. Here I am, a ninth grader. And they're talking about, they got posters and talking about, I didn't think I've accomplished a whole lot to have them doing this.
Folks conversant with the story of LeBron James, the high school star who's already practiced with the pros, may be surprised to find that Dewan Chandler, who was 15, 30 years ago, got to know some of the NBA guys, too.
The better the athlete, the more opportunities for him to get into things. Because even at 15 years old, I used to hang out with guys like, some professional athletes. I don't want to give their names. But they used to do things with me, things that 15-year-old kids shouldn't do, shouldn't be involved with.
Eventually, Boston College signed Chandler to play basketball, although not until he'd run a gauntlet of people who wanted him to go somewhere else.
But before I went to BC, this is a whole crazy thing, that they actually paid me.
Who's the they?
They, agents. The agent came and said, here's money for you. I went to visit schools, Southern Cal, Oregon. I was supposed to go to Maryland. And I'm talking, they was talking about here. What do you need? They want you to sign and go to certain schools where they can keep an eye on you, where they have influence at, where they can see you play night in and night out.
Has that changed, do you think?
No. The only thing that's changed with that is now you can go from high school to the NBA. You know, and that's Friday's move now. So now everyone's looking for the next kid who can go to the NBA because you're talking about a tremendous amount of money that can be generated from that play if he's good enough.
As it turned out, DeJuan Chandler was not good enough. He played for 4 years at Boston College, but the pros weren't interested, and Chandler's academic experience prepared him for nothing except the assumption that somebody in the athletic department would take care of whatever assignments he couldn't handle himself.
Jack was our target guy. Jack was a guy like we're having some problems or if we need something and it's academically challenging and we think we're going to have some problems, I go and talk to Jack and say, Jack, man, I need a paper. Let's say, again, this is a 20-page paper. I don't think I can do this paper. I need a paper. And Jack knew it wasn't the right thing to do, but he really felt like he really had his hands tied. And he knew that in the long run that some of us would suffer because of it.
DeJuan Chandler's story was not unusual. Neither were the circumstances at Boston College unique.
I know a guy in Washington, D.C., who was a first-team All-American. When he came, his name was Ratcliffe. And he went to Howard University, first team, high school All-American, sleeping on a bench now in Washington, D.C. But obviously they didn't, you know, he didn't get the nourishment as a person that he needed, and it all backfired on him, and he probably feels real guilty about what happened, and he's kind of quit on himself.
To his credit, DeJuan Chandler hasn't quit. In his last year at Boston College, he dropped out of all his classes, and since then he's had lots of problems he didn't much want to discuss. But sometimes he still dreams about a degree.
I haven't done as well as I like to. I still have some things I need to overcome. And so I'm struggling to overcome these things, but I get up on a daily basis and I make a commitment to try to show up to this. And I got a semester. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to finish this thing, but I like to be optimistic, and I think that somewhere down the line in the near future that, you know, that me and Jack will find a way for me to get my degree.
Get your degree.
Yeah. And maybe I'll do some work this time.
DeJuan Chandler and Mike Jones have in common the fact that as children who played basketball like men, they drew to themselves considerable acclaim. Mike Jones has had the advantage of a father who coached him with good sense and restraint, a mother who's fiercely determined that her son will be educated, and a high school coach who has protected him from the street agents and various other corrosive influences, the pros included, who greased the slide for DeJuan Chandler. But to suggest that Mike Jones's road will be less rutted simply because he'll be entering the University of Maryland 25 years after DeJuan Chandler arrived at Boston College would be naive. Today, the stakes are higher than ever, and the players are more valuable, too. But if they do not take care of themselves, and if they do not get, as DeJuan Chandler puts it, nourishment as a person, they're just as vulnerable, just as disposable as they've ever been. You're listening to Only a Game. Our conversation 2 weeks ago with the two guys who'd visited every Major League Baseball, basketball, football, and hockey venue in the country drew an email from Jay Paterno, quarterback's coach at Penn State University. Tell those guys they're welcome to come to a college football game at Penn State, Coach Paterno wrote. We'll even let them take their picture on the field before the game. 71-year-old listener Lillian Restaino Bauman has declared herself a fan of Only a Game's diversity and of Charlie Pierce. He comes up with extraordinary quips, she wrote, but Avignon presidency, brilliant, in one adjective, Charlie, you say it all. Having heard the discussion in which Charlie Pierce and I laughed about some British soccer fans throwing celery at the players, Carol Williams wrote to chide us. Someone on your research staff dropped the ball or the celery root. When Europeans talk about celery, they don't mean the stalk as we do, but the root, which can be as big as a large grapefruit and is very solid, much more so than a pumpkin. I don't think you'd enjoy being pelted by one. I'll have to get the research staff on that as soon as we get a research staff that specializes in roots, tubers, things of that nature. Mary Malmros, who hears only a game on WAMC in Albany, New York, writes, when you devote large amounts of time to magic players, canine athletes, cyber athletes, and the like, and don't say one single word about sports such as ski racing, you've really gone way too far. Is anyone on your staff aware that the U.S. ski team is in the middle of one of its most successful seasons ever? Yes. Now? And I'll add our congratulations to Bodie Miller, who won a gold medal in the combined on Thursday in Switzerland at the World Championships. Finally, Nancy Parsons, who listens to us on WHYY in Philadelphia, wrote to ask, how can you have a wonderful story about a 90-year-old female weightlifter and then not have a picture of her on your website? I suppose the answer is that remote radio reporters rarely think to provide visuals. Send your questions or answers to us via the website, onlyagame.org. Our email address is onlyagame@wbur.bu.edu. We live at WBUR, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215. You can reach our listener line by calling 617-353-1860. It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR in Boston, where Only a Game is produced, and from the other NPR member stations airing this program. Additional support comes from Thermo Electron, the scientific instruments company with a mission to advance drug discovery, improve manufacturing, and protect people and the environment, on the web at thermo.com. And from Nutter McLennan and Fish, working to solve critical legal issues on local, national, and international levels. Information at Nutter.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Frugal Fannies, a private, family-operated Massachusetts company dedicated to providing women with name-brand fashions that fit their lifestyles and budgets. Open Thursday through Sunday only. By Innuendo, presenting the Hunter Douglas Grand Opening Event, featuring the new Window Fashions Gallery and showcasing the complete Hunter Douglas line. Innuendo on Route 9 in Natick. And by Uptown Gourmet in Wellesley, preparing four-course romantic dinners for Valentine's to share at home. Carry out orders from Rack of Lamb to Tiramisu at 781-235-1885. Good morning. I'm Dolores Handy. In sports headlines, the Boston Bruins play on national television at 3 o'clock today as they host the Pittsburgh Penguins at the Fleet Center. The Celtics are off for the NBA All-Star break. Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker will play for the Eastern Conference in tomorrow's All-Star game in Atlanta. It's 7:39. WBUR, the Kennedy Library, and the Boston Globe present a free discussion on Monday night with Chief CBS Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer as he chronicles the major news events and public figures he's covered over the last 40 years. That's Monday night at the Kennedy Library. For more information, call 617-514-1643. Mostly sunny today, highs in the lower 30s.
Imagine the view from your cabin as your train follows the old Karoo pioneering trail. Now imagine the view as your plane skirts the snow-capped top of Mount Kilimanjaro. I'm Robert Siegel. Join Scott Simon and me this June for a journey through Africa on the next Citizens of the World Tour. Proceeds help pay for the news. Learn more at a reception I'll be hosting this Monday night. To reserve your space, call 800-909-9287. I look forward to meeting you.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, the teenagers of Bemidji, Minnesota invade a sleepy New England town and sweep. But first, the week's non-curling sports news with Charlie Pierce. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Bill.
On Tuesday, United States Olympic Committee President Marty Mankemeyer resigned. She said, "This is a time when the USOC needs to refocus its priorities and avoid public displays of disagreement." I gather we can take this to mean that dubious land purchases and shady Pan Am Games contracts are a thing of the past as far as the USOC is concerned.
Yes, they have to renew their focus on being honest is what they have to renew their focus on. If you've been keeping score at home, Marty Mankemeyer, the president of USOC, recently resigned because she was involved in a conflict of interest land deal that also involved Lloyd Ward, the USOC chief executive, who got his own problem because he was in a conflict of interest thing with the Pan Am Games involving his brother. And, of course, Mankemeyer replaced Sandra Baldwin, who quit because she faked her academic credentials. Are we keeping up here?
Thanks to Summit County, Ohio Judge James Williams, senior superstar LeBron James will play most of his high school team's remaining games despite his acceptance of vintage jerseys worth $845 a couple of weeks ago. Has justice been served here, Charlie?
Oh, hell, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was an overreaction, you know, suspending him for life or whatever it was for taking the two throwback jerseys. I'm more offended by the fact that each one of them cost $400.
Yeah, there is a problem there, isn't there?
But, I mean, I don't think Wes Unseld got paid $400 for his entire NBA career. You know, what you've got here is a phenomenon that has completely overpowered the structure of high school basketball. And I think basically the only thing anybody can do right now, including the state of Ohio, is let this thing play itself out. And LeBron James, this time next year, will be sitting on the bench for Cleveland or someone. And this problem, I believe, will go away because there doesn't seem to be another LeBron James on the horizon.
Over the past few weeks, we have celebrated college basketball coaches who have broken the 800-win barrier. Tennessee's Pat Summitt, Jody Conrad of Texas, and now a coach at Texas Tech named something like Roberta Knight or something like that. I don't know why I hadn't heard of her before.
Yeah, rah friggin' rah, huh? Bob Knight gets his 800th win. Very nice. He got it in Lubbock. The only thing that would have pleased me more is if he somehow managed to get it on the moon so we wouldn't have to pay attention to him. He's still a volatile thug. I don't care how charming this 800 wins is. There are better people who have won 800 games. There will be better people who won 800 games. Congratulations, Bob. Stay in Lubbock.
So you don't buy what he said in at least one of the articles about him, quote, "I have changed."
No, I
quote.
Don't. I've heard this. I mean, this is the USOC. I've seen this. I've done my time in this rodeo.
Speaking of coaching and controversy, Jesse Jackson is in the NFL news once again, this time questioning the process by which the Detroit Lions hired former 49ers coach Steve Mariucci. Does Jesse Jackson have any kind of case based on what the NFL itself said it was going to do?
Well, a little bit of one. I don't think there's any question that Steve Mariucci is from, you know, who's from Michigan, is really a terrific coach, was done dirt in San Francisco. If you want to make him your only candidate, if you're the Detroit Lions, I don't have a problem with that. Of course, what the Reverend Jackson is emphasizing is that if your hiring practices have been as disgraceful as the NFL's have down through the years, you get yourself in a corner where even the most innocent transaction makes you look guilty.
There's also been some controversy regarding Oakland Raiders lineman Barrett Robbins, who has recently been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. This is, of course, the fellow who missed the Super Bowl. Apparently, nobody on the team seems quite ready to accept the diagnosis, and I wasn't aware that so many of the Raiders had been to medical school.
Especially big, fat, useless Dr. Frank Middleton, who ought to be seeing an orthopedist himself to correct the crick in his neck watching Tampa Bay linemen go running by him. I don't know why these guys just don't shut up. It's fairly clear that there's a serious medical problem here. Nobody cares what diagnosis Frank Middleton makes of a teammate on some pathetic overnight sports radio program. I don't understand why somebody in the Oakland Raiders just doesn't get the team together and say, until we know more, you guys know nothing.
One group not happy with the way the Super Bowl went, Charlie, at least on television, is the Hip Hop Summit Action Network, which called for a boycott of Pepsi-Cola during the NBA's All-Star Weekend because it claims there's a double standard within the soft drink company's advertising policy. What's this all about?
Well, Pepsi originally signed up Ludacris, a rapper, to be a spokesman. Ludacris's records are not ones you would play in any convent that I've ever been in. His language is somewhat sub-Churchillian. There was a national boycott campaign led by insufferable blowhard Bill O'Reilly. Pepsi fired Ludacris, essentially, then hired Ozzy Osbourne.
Ah, yes.
Noted orator, raconteur, and famous profane old white guy to be the Pepsi spokesman. There's a certain double standard at work here. The hip-hop people have noticed that, and now they're making their displeasure felt.
While we're on the subject of sponsors, there seems to be an exodus of same from NASCAR. Will we see racing around in circles again next year? Are they in trouble?
This is actually a very interesting phenomenon that's been going on with NASCAR since NASCAR had its explosion over the last 10 or 15 years. The traditional sponsors, RJR Reynolds, Union 76, are withdrawing from the sport in favor of people like UPS, Coca-Cola, and McDonald's. This is, of course, NASCAR attaching itself to a little bit what snobby people would refer to as higher-end products because of its popularity. It's very much parallel to the notion of NASCAR moving out of the South and moving into everywhere in the United States.
Charlie, there's apparently a new goon in the National Hockey League, and his name is Mario, and I guess he's fairly new to the league. I'm not familiar with his goonery.
This is nuts. I mean, you and I both remember the famous fight in the exhibition game between Larry Bird and Julius Erving.
I do indeed.
In which everybody looked around and realized that it was, you know, it was sort of like, you know, seeing a fist fight in Parliament or something. The other night, the Penguins were losing very badly to the Florida Panthers, and Mario Lemieux went sticks, glove, jersey, as they say, against a guy named Brad Ferentz. Ferentz, I got to give him credit. He actually understands the NHL philosophy quite well. He says, quote, he, meaning Lemieux, deserves a double standard, too, because he's one of the best players ever. And he says, I was just like, let's get back to Fort Lauderdale and call it a day.
Didn't want to fight the superstar.
No, who wants to fight Mario Lemieux?
On Wednesday, John Hirschbeck became the second major league umpire suspended for making inappropriate comments. Hirschbeck threatened Rob Manfred, executive vice president for labor relations. Last week, Bruce Fremming made anti-Semitic comments. What is up off-season with the angry umps?
Well, Hirschbeck's an interesting situation because he was the umpire involved in the altercation with Robbie Alomar several years ago, where Alomar insisted. Hirschbeck prompted the inexcusable spitting incident by saying something off-color and derisive to Alomar. He's clearly a man with a temper. I don't know what he possibly said to Rob Manfred, but the offense, which is inappropriate use of language in a conversation with a Major League Baseball executive, you could suspend half of baseball, I would imagine, under that rubric, especially at contract time.
Finally, one football fan happy with the result of this year's Super Bowl is a neighborhood gal named Jennifer who can afford to live pretty much anywhere she wants to now.
Jennifer Lopez makes herself $650,000 being a smart person and betting legally, of course, on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There are a lot of jokes we can make about Jennifer Lopez winning a lot of money and where she's going to keep her wallet, but we're going to let those pass.
I'm just happy that she's still Jenny from the block. Even with all that extra money.
Yeah, the block is on Rodeo Drive right now.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Globe magazine. He's written a couple of books. He's a star here on Only a Game, and yet he's still just Charlie from the block. Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, Bill. What you get is what you see. Don't be fooled by the rocks that I got. I'm still Jenny from the block. Used to have a little, now I have a lot. Where I go, I know where I came from. Don't be fooled by the rocks that I got.
Kid, I love my life and my public. Put God first and can't forget to stay real. To me, it's like breathing.
Don't be fooled by the rocks that I got. I'm still Jenny from the block. Used to have a little, now I have a lot. Where I go, I know where I came from. Don't be fooled by the rocks that I got. I'm still yeah. Jenny from the block. Used to have a little, now I have a lot.
Never in the history of curling has the United States won a gold medal in the women's division at the world level. Never, that is, until last March, when Cassie Johnson and her teammates from Minnesota shocked Canada and then Sweden to take the top prize at the Women's World Junior Championships. Now, as Only a Game's Karen Given reports, they're trying to do it again.
On the fifth day of the U.S. Junior National Curling Championships, the junior women have taken to the ice for an early morning game at Broomstone's Curling Club in Wayland, Massachusetts. On the second ice sheet, dressed in a sharp black uniform and Converse curling shoes, Cassie Johnson, skip of Minnesota 1, quietly surveys her situation. While less successful skips scream and shout instructions, Johnson prefers to use hand signals to direct her teammates. Her opponents call her nearly silent style an uncanny test of team communication. But for Johnson, it's a practical choice.
I'm pretty quiet usually off the ice. I'm a little quieter than the rest of my teammates even. So usually they can yell louder than I can sometimes on a shot, so they help me out.
Johnson is a fourth-generation curler, and she's been hanging out at curling rinks for as long as she can remember. At her local rink in Bemidji, Minnesota, Johnson is exposed to plenty of championship curling.
Bemidji is kind of the hot spots for curling because we have the Olympic team that comes from Bemidji, and I know them really well. And we came from Bemidji, but there are still people that are like, oh, what's curling? And they don't even know where the curling rink is, so it's just...
While Johnson works on her skills at the rink in Bemidji, her teammates practice closer to home. The four members of Johnson's team are scattered across Minnesota and Wisconsin and can only practice together a couple of times a month. Lead Maureen Brunt attends school in Madison, Wisconsin, more than 9 hours away from Bemidji. A curler since she was six, Brunt says in the upper Midwest, where winters are long and ice sports are king, curling isn't the geekiest sport to play as a kid.
No, no, it's not. Not when you're good at it anyways. My friends always enjoyed coming to watch, and they got to try it in gym class, so they knew what I was doing, and they appreciated the finesse of the sport.
Johnson and her team are still undefeated as they enter the finals on Saturday afternoon to play Minnesota 2, the runners-up in the state championships. A capacity crowd fills Broomstone's clubhouse, and players not lucky enough to be in the finals huddle beneath blankets on folding chairs out on the ice.
Oh my God, I'm almost going to have to take this blanket off, it's so hot.
While the girls from Wisconsin tease the boys from Wisconsin about their lack of blankets, Kelly Snyder, second for Team Alaska, watches the game intently. Like many of the curlers here, she's missed more than a week of school and work to attend this tournament. And she'll miss another week and a half when she goes to the Women's Nationals in 3 weeks. But she says it became easier to explain her absences after interest in curling peaked at the Salt Lake Olympics last year.
Like my teachers, like I'm a freshman at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to Junior Nationals for curling. This year they're like, oh, cool. Last year they're like, what? I think it makes a huge difference, and hopefully it'll just continue next year in Torino 2006.
As the stakes increase, so does Johnson's volume. The two teams from Minnesota have met each other in the state and national finals more than once and are familiar with each other's strategies. Through the first third of the game, both teams play conservatively and nobody scores. Watching the game from the clubhouse balcony, Broomstone's member Tim Ho is impressed with the action, despite the low scores.
This is not a junior level event. These guys and these girls can play at an elite level and at a world level. So that's great. And that's what we're seeing here is that level of curling.
By the ninth end, Johnson's team is in trouble. With only one more end to play, they're 1 point down, and Minnesota 2's in position to score two more. To have a good chance at the win, Johnson must knock out both of those rocks, leaving hers behind.
These are the types of shots that win championships. So there, the rock's away. It looks close. It's got a chance. It's got a chance.
That's a made shot.
With that, Johnson's team takes a narrow lead and manages to hold on to it through the last end. As Johnson and her team triumphantly enter the warm clubhouse, a crush of fans greets them.
Next time, don't make us wait so long. Super curly, guys, it's super.
While many of the week's competitors confer about what they're wearing to the awards banquet, Cassie Johnson now has something bigger on her mind. The World Finals in Flims, Switzerland in March.
I'll probably go home and start practicing right away. Yeah, and I think the other teammates will too.
Not much rest.
No, not at all.
Johnson will be too old to compete in the juniors after this year, but the team plans to stay together and train for the next Winter Olympics in Torino in 2006. That's a plan that leaves Tim Ho smiling.
You know, it doesn't need to be the next big sport. It just needs to be, you know, viable and sustainable with young juniors coming out and curling and keeping going. And perhaps you will see some of these players out here now, you know, with an Olympic medal around their neck, and that'd be great.
Coming through this way. Clear the path. Coming through.
For Only a Game, I'm Karen Given in Wayland, Massachusetts.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Gabe O'Connor. Our technical director is Michael Garth. We had help this week from Mark Moran of member station KJZZ in Phoenix. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To order a tape of Only a Game, call 1-800-909-9287, toll-free. CDs and cassettes are $15 postpaid. That's 1-800-909-9287. If you'd like to hear this program again, sign up for our newsletter or cyber sweep with the Bemidji Broom Brigade, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. Our final word this week comes from Minnesota One's Becky Dobie, who imparts this important bit of wisdom to future curlers.
Yawning helps loosen your facial muscles and keeps you relaxed while you're playing.
Gee, I had no idea that curlers are every bit as bored, relaxed, as curling spectators. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, offering discerning patients a same-day tooth replacement solution for failed root canal treated or missing teeth. Information is available online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is WBUR.